Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee, the podcast on the business of video production.
Creatives Grab Coffee is hosted by Dario Nuri and Kirill Lazarov from Labs Productions. Our goal is to share knowledge and experiences from video production professionals around the world. Whether you're a freelancer looking to start your own business or a seasoned business owner aiming to scale your company, this is the show for you.
Join us as we develop a community of like-minded creatives looking to learn and help each other grow. Welcome to the business of video production. Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee.
Before we get started with the show, let's go over today's sponsors.
Do you have a shoot in Toronto? Do you need crew or a strong production partner to help you with your project? Labs Productions is one of the top production companies in Toronto and your go-to video partner.
With our strong creative skills and extensive network, we can help you achieve your goal. Labs Productions is able to offer you production services, white label services, or finder fees for project handoffs.
Reach out to us on our website at lapsproductions.com to learn more.
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group van packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We're more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all gonna have a real good time.
And now, let's begin the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Creatives Grab Coffee. This time, we're back to Canada again, and we've reached out to Montreal, and we currently have Israel Banecki from IND Films here with us. Israel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, let's start off with a little history lesson. Let's learn a little bit about who you are and how you started your company.
So the company started by a fluke. I was trained in graphic arts and then stumbled onto photography, which I loved. And then doing photography, I got invited to do the DP for a student film. And that was like an epiphany, right? So I loved it. And from then onwards, I just kept on working on video. This is in the early 2000s, around 2000, actually. So I started a small company that wanted to do everything, which was the stupidest thing I could ever done.
And by full service, you mean like not just video?
Like everything. Right? I was doing like graphic design and web design and e-commerce and photography and video and all that stuff. And in my thinking, because I was obviously inexperienced and afraid, my thinking was that was a sure bet of never not have work. So, but no, never do that ever. Because what happens is that you, first of all, you never become great at anything. And second, everybody knows you for something else. So you can't ever be the first call from a client to do something because you're like a Swiss Army knife. You're at the bottom of the barrel. You're the cheap, the one that gets people out of trouble last minute. So not a good thing.
I'm surprised you were able to do it because again, it is like multiple different skills that you have to at least get to a pretty acceptable level, you know?
And know well how to sell it, know well how it works, and it's a lot.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, and that's what I'm saying. I got never good at really selling any of that because, you can't. So like some people know you from doing web design and they never, like they have no idea that you also do video or photography or other things. And the same for people who do video work with you. They have no idea you also do logo design. So like in my foggy, stupid brain, I thought, I'm going to get great clients that I'm going to do everything for. That's not how it works. So wrong thinking. It took me a while to get aligned. Oh, sorry. Coffee machine.
Some for us.
Yeah.
Hey, what is this podcast without coffee? You know, it is
exactly.
What it is. We
understand. There we go. So it took me a while to get aligned, and finally I cut out everything else and focused just on video and photography. And then eventually photography got really relegated to a much, much lower tier. And we still offer that as a service, but it's more like an add-on, like courtesy type of thing.
That's the same thing with us. We were about to go down the same path at one point, and then I just realized it was too much work and
too much.
Couldn't figure out like the markups and like the amount of time that it would take. So I just figured the easiest approach for us was to just find partners in those fields and just bring them in for those projects. With the exception of photography, we kind of have a partner that does white label for us. But for like graphic design, for example, I just couldn't figure out the numbers because I was like, I'm going to get stuck with so many emails. And it's like, if it's like a small project, it's going to cost me more than what the project is worth just in time.
Yeah,
to execute it. So I just couldn't make it work for us.
It's all opportunity costs, especially when you're dealing with multiple services. And, you know, and you think a lot of the time when you're starting out, you think that, okay, the clients will know, they'll do their research and they'll know that I could do everything. But a lot of the time we have found is that sometimes clients, they barely glance at your website and they won't even know everything that you offer. They're going to immediately just come to contact you. So if they're contacting you for one service, and you're just going to explain that to them and help them with it, they're only going to know you for that. They didn't do their crazy due diligence in looking at every page on your website to see all the different services you did. So
you know what I'm noticing, Kirill, lately is that they'll find, with the new leads that we have coming in, I'm noticing they'll find one video on the website and that's the one that sells them on it. But I know they don't check out the rest.
That's the thing. Yeah. They only see one thing.
The one video.
But that's a good thing, because it's like when they find the one thing that they like,
the
and
reference.
They'll immediately
connect.
They'll immediately
them.
Call.
Yeah. It's good, and that's a problem that I see with some people that have a very specific need and can't really transpose the, you know, your ability or your technical skills or your creativity to something else. So if they want a video of a dog running, and you don't have one like that, they assume that you can't do it.
Yeah.
They want this exact video, the exact
exactly.
same way,
yeah.
from the exact
yeah.
same client.
Yeah.
I was running into that recently, but I kind of like, it's with a client that we've already done work with, and they were looking for a very specific thing. And I was like, we've done stuff similar. Like, we can do that. It's in the same, you know, the wheelhouse of stuff we can do, right? So
yeah,
but it's tricky with new ones, eh? They really have to take that leap of faith. I also do understand it from their point of view, because it's like they don't know you, they don't know that you actually can execute on it, right?
Yeah,
it's tricky.
And
for sure,
it's a big investment when you think about it. I feel like us being in this business, it's almost like you kind of like separate yourself from, like, you know, how much everything will cost eventually. But if you also look at it from clients' perspectives, you know, obviously depending on who you're selling it to, especially smaller businesses, investing in video is a huge investment. So they really want to make sure that every dollar that they pay for the video is being put to good use, that it's worth it, it's valuable. And you just have to understand that and just help be as open and like, I don't know if empathetic is the right word, but kind of like educate them as much as you can about what you can give them as well.
For sure. It's difficult to, like you said, to educate clients. I find that, and it's like a little bit of a contradiction, because small businesses can't spend a lot of money, and they end up spending more than they should because they're trying to save so much and cut corners in some places where they shouldn't. So they end up spending more than they would have otherwise, if they listened to your advice.
Have you experienced something like that, that just kind of sticks out in your mind? Like,
Like a specific kind of example?
Yeah, yeah. Like, because that's an interesting point you bring up. We haven't really heard about that. Or it hasn't been brought up on the show before where, you know, when clients try to cut corners, that it could end up being more expensive for them. I'm just curious if you have an example that comes to mind.
I have a bunch, but like one recent is a client that we do frequent work for. But early on in our relationship, they asked us for a quote for a small video. We sent a quote. It was not expensive at all because it was a very simple thing to do. So they end up not going with us. And then like 3 weeks later, they reached out and said, hey, can you pick up the pieces? We hired somebody else. And it didn't quite work out. So we did it at the same price they would have paid in the first place. So they ended up spending whatever they spent with this other person or company or whomever, plus what we charged. I mean, it was frustrating, not because we didn't get the work in the first place, because, you know, it's fine, but it was frustrating because we feel bad for these guys that they didn't only wasted money, they wasted time. They went through like a whole bunch, I think we got like a V7 or something from the other company.
Whoa.
Like a version 7?
Yeah, like a version, like, 7.
Oh, version 7. That's a lot of revisions, yeah.
Yeah, that they never really were happy with anyway. So, we know this client, right? So we nailed it in like 2 revisions, no problem.
We've had similar stuff where they came, like they finished that project, but they came to us for the next one because they weren't too happy with it.
But
same,
that's different.
Same thing.
That's different because at the very least, it was, at least for them, a whole new project and they actually did use it. Whereas in your situation, Israel, I call that the client education tax, you know, so it's their learning tax, which will help them over time.
And there's another example. In this case, it's weird because this is one of the higher budget projects that we've done. This was like a $70,000 job we did. We spent quite a few months planning and doing all the pre-production work and everything. And we kept on telling this client, okay, make sure that, because their manufacturing is all over the place, and we were expecting a piece from somewhere in the Midwest in the U.S. And we said, okay, so our shoot date is this. Are you sure this thing is a prototype, right? So we said, are you sure this thing is going to be ready? We're better off just waiting another week and have this thing here before we go. And it's like, no problem. Anyways, so we ended up doing the shoot without the piece because it didn't arrive for the day of the shoot. So we had to do a bunch of green screen work and compositing afterwards to add that into the final video. So that is an example of them not really listening to advice and wanting to rush into things. And this is not because they weren't willing to spend money. It was just because they weren't willing to wait an extra day or two or a week. We still had to wait a week because the thing didn't come. Then we had to set up another shoot. We had to set up a whole new thing, and it ended up costing him another $10,000. So
it's just like tax.
No reason.
Oh, Kirill, your audio's off.
Sorry, there's like a lot of like horns outside of my condo, so I turn it off every now and then.
It's all right.
I was just saying that.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Did you have something to add, Kirill?
No, I was just commenting on it, yeah.
Okay, so we went through the early beginnings of your company, jack of all trades, master of none, decided to just focus on video. Where are you now? Like, what's happened since you started focusing strictly on video to now?
So that was a very uphill battle because, again, we had to break away from that label of the people who, you know, who come in and save the day for cheap. So just increasing your pricing is very difficult because you're known for being cheap, right? So it took a number of years to get to a point where we were starting to charge what the work was worth.
How did you go about that transition, like increasing your prices?
So this is a very weird thing with me, and it's probably the same for a lot of people who do what they like to do, because I enjoy so much what we do that I feel unfair charging for it. It's a weird thing with me. I have a hard time asking for more money to do something that I thoroughly enjoy doing. So I know I need to see a counselor for this. Yeah.
he needs a business seminar, you know. That's our psychologist.
I was trying to understand the mentality behind it. I was like, nope, I don't get it.
There is no. Consciously I know that, but when it comes to pricing, now, like, I've gotten better at that, but like in that growth period, that was difficult for me. It was saying like, come on, it's so easy to do this, like why should I charge so much? So or how can I, more than why should, is like how can I justify, you know, charging this much more for something that is fun for me to do?
I think it's also partially that maybe you couldn't separate the hobby from the work mindset as well, because when you're first starting,
it wasn't a hobby for him. He was already deep in the trenches.
It was not, like, this is already years into it.
There's a motto from a very very important man that once said, if you're good at something, never do it for free.
Oh, he was a great man.
He was a great man.
You know what's the worst is that I would talk to people and give that advice, like other people. I would, like, because, and obviously, as you guys do, we would shoot like a bunch of business meetings and seminars and stuff where we're all in sales meetings and stuff like that, where you're like, all they're talking about is this, and still my brain refused to accept that. So I said, in a conscious level, I had this knowledge that I should, but in this emotional level, I had a hard time applying it. So it took a while. So in the end,
well, how did you go about? Because I'm guessing if you're having that, probably other people are going through the same thing. So how did you kind of overcome that barrier, that like mental barrier of like not feeling comfortable?
I haven't fully.
So it's ongoing. But
it's those addiction issues where you have the monkey on your back and you're struggling to get it off your back. So that's pretty much the same thing.
Is it because you're afraid of rejection on the budget increase?
No,
is that it?
I don't have that problem anymore of being worried about not getting the job. Although sometimes we do, and it's weird because I've lost bids because we're too low.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we've lost some as well because they must have looked at like the other top, like if we were in the running with like three people in total, like they might have seen that we were way below the other two guys.
Exactly.
Way and below the average, like an outlier.
Yeah, and probably lost one or two because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's happened to me more than once. So it's discipline. It's discipline. It's really setting and looking at it as if it's not you doing it, which is not like I don't do everything. Like I work with a bunch of people here, in the studio, in the office, and as a business model. So it's not me doing everything. Like so there's a cost. And there's time involved in everything. So you need to really look at it from a mathematical formula, if you will. And so that's pretty much how you get around.
Right. And the other thing is, like, when you're trying to kind of figure out your new pricing model and start testing it out, is usually is easier with newer leads and newer clients that come through rather than current ones. And maybe that's sometimes with the challenge where it's like, you know, like things have changed, you have a lot more work, you need to raise your prices. And then you got to have that conversation with your current client saying like, hey, unfortunately, I can't do it for as little as I used to. This was something that Dario and I experienced early on when we were getting in the industry, because when we first started, we were charging dirt cheap on videos. And then we started realizing, okay, we need to increase a bit more if we're actually going to make any money in this business.
Our problem was our jump was too high. Like, reflecting back on it, if we did like gradual increases, we could have kept those clients.
Yeah, I think we were just a little too ambitious to jump too greatly. But again, it's a learning experience. You have to figure these things out over time and learn.
But you know, I think it was not a bad thing for me, because I got rid of a bunch of clients that weren't good clients. That you know, just a small increase would have lost them for me.
Yeah, some of them are like that. That's for sure. Some of them are definitely like that. I noticed that with a handful as well, really early on.
So I mean, it's good. It's like it's a good housekeeping exercise that you get rid of some of the clients that, and I'm sure you've probably experienced this. The clients that spend the least are the ones that demand the most.
Yeah.
In a general scheme of things, and that's probably to what you're saying, that because they don't have a big budget, they really try to get the most out of whatever money they're spending. So they're very demanding, especially nonprofits are hard to work with, because they're run by volunteers for the most part, they really have no idea what they're doing. And I'm not saying this in a, you know, a demeaning way. It's just, they just don't know. So it's very, very hard for them to justify to their board why they need to spend $10,000 on a video or $7,000 or $15,000, whatever it is. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes people just come to you and say, I want a video, and they don't even know why they want a video. It's just because they think everybody must have a video. So they have no purpose or strategy in the production. So it's, you know, sometimes I've, you know, run to the exercise with new clients, and in the end, they realize that they actually don't need a video at that moment. And it's probably shooting myself on the foot, but I know they'll come back when they actually know that they need a video. That'll come back because there's a trust factor in that.
What's in your equation? What you just mentioned now? What's your like strategy session like? Like when you sit down with them and kind of evaluate what their goals and their vision is?
Well, asking the questions that most of us ask, you know, like, what are we doing, where is it going, and everything. But like, for me, one of the most important questions is, why are you doing it? Like, what, you know, what's the goal, what are you trying to achieve? And based on that, we work backwards and then, you know, try to establish the right path for that. Because some people, like I said, clients come and want something, and they probably saw this very sleek Porsche ad, and they say, I love it. I want my, you know, my teacups ad to look like that. And then you say, okay, so who's watching this video? Why do you want that? And of course we can do it. It's going to cost you $25,000, but do you really need to spend that money doing this thing that could be done for half of that or double that? Who knows, right? So it's like asking the why is very, very important for me, for us as a business. I try to instill that into all the people that work with me. Like, find out the why first, and then everything else will probably fall into place kind of more organically.
One thing you also brought up that was good, that a lot of people don't think of when you're asking the why, it's not just, maybe I might be shooting myself in the foot by asking the why and letting them know that they don't need the video now or maybe later,
But on the flip side, asking the why might determine an even greater need for the client and might need even more video work, as you just mentioned. And you could potentially be bringing more business to yourself as well, but also at the same time, actually helping the client. Like, instead, they might realize they don't need just one video, but they need maybe a series of 3 to 5 videos that they could post within a certain time frame. And that's more work for you, and that's more content for them. So asking the why is, it was a common theme in on this show that just keeps being brought up. You know, it's so key to ask that question, and then everyone will succeed as a result.
Yeah, like, you're absolutely right. It happens. It's happened to me like at least this year twice already. Exactly that scenario you described is, they come and say, I want a 5-minute video or whatever it is, length. And then when you start asking the questions, the why and the, you know, where's it going? What do you want to do with it? What you want to get out of it? Then you say, you know what? Like, I don't think this format, this thing you're looking for is right for you. I think it's better if we do it, you know, spread it over, you know, make it a campaign more than just one single video. And that's going to, you know, it's going to live longer. It's going to get you fresher content. So we ended up, you know, creating a campaign for a year that where we produce, we shoot once every 2 months. And out of those shoots, we produce about 7 videos, small short videos that they post, you know, almost every 2 weeks. So we have, you know, they create enough content that keeps them fresh, keeps them relevant for what they're doing. Every week they're putting out new content that's well produced, that's well shot, that's well edited. And it's costing them barely anything more than if they had done it in a like per video basis.
Oh, so it's kind of like a retainer or like a pre-booked contract.
Yeah, this particular client is it became a retainer.
Oh, okay.
It's not so much a retainer because it's yeah, more like a contract.
Because you said it was a campaign, right?
Yeah, like a retainer for me is more like, okay, so you have like a block of X hours and we can do whatever we want within those hours. Mm-hmm. And this is a very specific purpose with a very specific objective. And like, it's a project that's well delineated.
Pre-booked project, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What was I going to ask? Are you a generalist or are you focusing on specific niches?
We were for the, I mean, everybody is, I guess, until you are like that really one, like coveted company for a very specific thing, right? We do take most work that comes. We try to avoid events as much as we can.
How come?
It's just not our thing. But we do produce them. So let me be more specific. We try to avoid event coverage videos where like they hire you to get like just to make a recap, for instance, of an event. Mm-hmm. or stuff like that. But we do bid and look after or work where we produce the event as far as the video and the video content goes. So, for instance, we produce a yearly show with a partner of us, a great guy who is an event producer. So we work together in a bunch of projects, and we do the production of the video end. So everything from the content that's going to be shown on the screens to the camera work, to the switching, to the everything else. So those projects we enjoy doing. But if it's like a one-off where it's like a sales meeting and they just want a run and gun guy or two to go in and shoot the event and the barbecue and happy people and stuff like that, it's not something we're too keen on doing. Because, again, you can't command a high amount of money for those projects. It takes a lot of work. you end up with hours and hours and hours of footage at the end of these things that then you need to boil down to like a 3-minute thing. So it's a huge investment in time that nobody really wants to pay for. So we prefer not to embark in those things.
So if you're doing all the other content for the event, but just this one little tiny thing, you tell them, no, I'm sorry, we don't want to do it.
No, we do that. No. When it comes with it, when it comes as part of the package, we do it for sure.
Oh, okay. Not as a one-off. Not as a one-off, he means, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
No, I know.
It'd be funny.
Yeah, I'd be like, we'll do everything, but except for this one event video. Minor thing.
No. No, we do that because everything is
intertwined,
amortized. It's amortized. The investment is amortized, over the whole project.
But what about do you niche down into? Have you tried to niche into anything?
Yes, for industry, we are 100%. Yes, about 5 or 6 years ago, we started focusing more on medical work and industrial work. For many reasons, those are things that are, I guess, that industry is a lot more organized, if you will. They have they're more objective, as opposed to, a marketing agency that everything is always evolving as you go. A medical video, for instance, will have a very specific need that you can approach in a number of ways. You can get creative or you can get very didactic with that. But those are things that are a lot more enjoyable for us to do. And when we love everything, all the technological advances that are happening in medicine and all that is crazy. So we really like that work. And then the industrial stuff, we also, it's similar. It's like they're very nonsensical industries where they have a clear goal. They have a clear path they want to go down and it's easier to, not easier, but more enjoyable for us to plan and take him out of that very matter of fact approach and suggest a more creative approach to things they do.
Did you, how did you go about narrowing your focus down? Did you just look at your portfolio and say, I have a lot in this sector and I enjoy it? Or did you go I think this industry might be good for us? So you start doing more targeted ads or whatever?
Yeah, so I guess it was most of my life. I'm a little bit like water. So I go
Lee.
Where the path takes me. So we started, we got a couple of jobs to, actually a company from Spain contacted us, and this is something that happens a lot to us. We get a lot of hits for some reason. My SEO just gets us a lot of hits from abroad, but that's another story.
Interesting.
A company from Spain contacted us to do a product video. It's a machine that they use in surgeries. So we had to go into an OR and shoot the surgery being performed in this machine in action. And it was this is interesting. The video came out great, so they were super happy. And then after that, the clinic we shot at, they called us to do stuff for them, not for the machine manufacturer. So we started doing a little bit more work with them, and we figured, this is good. They don't have a huge problem with budgets. Obviously, they don't waste money, but they understand the value of what you're doing, and they're open to ideas. And it's eye candy. Looking at all those things is really beautiful to shoot. So we started gearing towards that more and more, and it's been working out great. So we've been doing some everything from lighting for the medical industry to technology. We're working on a tech platform for the medical industry, and ORs and pharma stuff. So yeah, it's great. We love it.
So was it, but did you, how did you, what I'm curious about is how did you expand in that field? Like, did you ask for referrals from like that client natural? And they kind of?
Well, it was pretty organic. You know, the more work we started doing, the more our website become populated with that. And yes, of course we started leaning on that, on the ads and on the, you know, obviously if you have a page that that is dedicated for that on your website, you obviously get more leads on that. So, yeah, that's pretty much how we started, like, narrowing down the scope.
It got me thinking, like, how to populate some of our pages on our website to update, because we've been meaning to update some stuff.
I'm slowly going through them. Like, there's a lot. Yeah. I think
we could go over this later.
I'll be done updating all the 2024 pages to 2025. I'm averaging like two a day. There's like 16 left I got to do.
Oh,
well. I think in a week and some change.
But those are the blogs. I mean, yeah, kind of like the layouts and like showcasing like certain types of videos that we do, like say if we were doing events specifically like that, updating with some of the newer content and then like maybe like changing some of the copy and the specifically that kind of like explaining more about the service offering and stuff like that. And then, yeah, changing, I guess, with some ads later. Like there's a lot that there's a huge list.
We have a lot of ads actually, targeted ads. We have a lot of those going on
right
now.
Yeah, that's good.
Do you using AdWords?
Yes, we're in the process of not leaving Google, but toning it down in favor of LinkedIn.
You do paid marketing on LinkedIn?
Yeah. Not yet, but we're starting to go that direction.
Yeah, it's gonna be expensive.
It's expensive, yeah. but I find Google is very hit and miss. Google Ads. I actually turned off the forms on the website because I was getting I was getting 20 applications a day from a bunch of people and not one lead.
Google Ads. I know a solution for you. Just have a separate form for those guys. Like, tell them
I had.
Oh, they weren't going to it?
They were just going to the wrong one?
I guess people are lazy though, so that like they you know, they're looking for work, they type video production companies and then your ad pops, they click on that and takes them to a landing page with a form and they just fill out the form.
There goes $2.
exactly.
That's what pisses me off too, because I'm like, how much did this guy cost me right now?
It's usually the voiceover artists too.
I get like, no kidding, we probably get an average of 3 to 5 job applications a day.
Whoa, there's $10 a day right there on your Google.
I've been getting gambling people applying. Like,
oh my God.
I swear to God, I don't even know.
What are they doing?
I don't know. It's some bot thing that's like going around and it's join this gambling website. And I'm like, buddy, like, who's running the script? Like,
it's crazy. I turned off the forms. We have no forms on the website. If you want to like contact you, either call or email, that's it. And that way I'm getting more valid leads.
Are you getting scam calls though by putting the phone number up there?
All the time.
That's why
you just traded one annoying thing for another.
At least I have fun with the scammers.
But the problem is, if you like, the longer you stay on,
time is money.
It triggers something on their system where they go like, "This might be a mark."
Yeah,
it's a real human. Let's keep calling him.
Yeah, no. Like I don't like when I have an extra few minutes, I do answer and make them waste time as much as I do. But it's more costly for them than it is for me. To keep him on the phone for 5 minutes.
You sure? You know that those five edits that are in queue waiting. You know, you got to get that done.
I don't do the editing, so
I wonder if I feel like getting rid of the form might be a bad call. But have you thought about maybe having like an assistant take care of that stuff so it doesn't waste a lot of your time?
What do you mean, like the weeding through the
just
the,
going the through like stuff? The like the lead forms, all that stuff? Or
well, we have a pretty good system. I just took it down because I didn't want to waste money.
Oh, and, like because of the Google ads, they were
exactly.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because like the clicks, like if he's getting five, well,
yeah, if you're getting five job at applications least a dollar a day, something, yeah,
that's what I was
yeah,
saying. Yeah, it's yeah. like that's yeah, $10 right there in just wasted money. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For, my, like for
our
Google ads.
Ad budget was being eaten up by.
That's $300 a month just because exactly. people are trying to be like, give me work. It's like you're taking money.
$3,600 a year.
You're taking money out of my pocket to tell me that you want to work.
Oh
and,
my God.
And you know something very interesting happened when we first set up the Google ads, we started getting a lot of very interesting leads and we got work. We were converting a lot. Then I got a call from a Google ads specialist from Google.
Oh no, these guys are the worst.
I know. So I was like, okay, and she's like, yeah, so we can improve your setup and everything. We went through hours of work with this person and I lost everything. Like I was getting nothing but crap. All my leads.
The whole point of the Google specialist is just to make you spend more money. Not exactly. effectively, just to spend more money, because that's yeah. how they make their money.
See, yeah. that's. I have a feeling, I have a sneaking suspicion that what happens when you first sign up, they give you all the best leads so that you feel like, okay, this is good. Maybe we can get more. Then it's they possible. Call you with their specialist that tell you, oh yeah, you see how good it is? If you invest a little bit more, then you'll get better. And then they just turn that off and then give you all the crap. That's exactly.
And then
I'm telling
and
you that's
then
what's happening.
And then you start throwing more money because you say, oh, maybe exactly. if I increase my spend, yep. I'll get more. So.
Well, the
yeah.
specialist Sneaky. Will. Because the thing is, if you do it yourself, you're probably optimizing it properly. If you get help from the specialist, they're just gonna like destroy it. So now, yeah. you do have to spend more money, and you are getting yep. more crap leads because it's not a good campaign. Yeah. But if you do yeah. it yourself, I think. Honestly, like I restarted it about a month and some change ago, and it wasn't that complicated to do. And especially yeah, no, with like I mean, ChatGPT, it was pretty straightforward and pretty helpful. There's some things I don't get, but I'm like, we're not doing like Search Max campaigns. Like we're just doing like basic stuff because for us, like just Google Maps and basic search, we're good enough with that stuff.
Yeah, I think I mean. It's not off. Like we are running ads. It's just not like we're not really effective. Putting a lot of thought or money into this for now. We are going to launch a big campaign because we're in the process of building a new studio. And this studio is going to be for rent. Obviously, we're going to use it. But like this is more of a studio that's going to be out for companies like us to use. It's going to be a virtual reality, mixed reality, like real time compositing type of thing.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that because you were telling me in the pre-interview how it's not like an LED wall, but it gives you like the same effect essentially, right?
Yeah. So like the brief story of this is that we saw this building next door where our office from where our office is. It was been there for like years, and so we put an offer. We bought it, we renovated it. We run into trouble with the contractor who was an idiot. We got a new one, and now it's being finished. And so we're setting up a studio there that's very specific for virtual reality production. So it's not like this massive space where you can bring a car or anything. It's very niche. And the reason we started it was because we are doing that work, the virtual production work, but it's very expensive to rent a place with a volume. You know, in Montreal, you can expect to spend anywhere between $40,000 to $60,000 a day to rent a studio with a volume.
Oh wow, it's crazy.
Yeah, and that gets you the studio, the volume, and a tech or two that run the volume. But you don't have an Unreal specialist. You don't have a grip DP. You have nothing. You still have to bring all your crew to the shoot. So at the end of the day, you're going to spend $20,000 more. So
like $100K almost right there.
Exactly. So you need to be shooting stuff for like Nike and Coca-Cola to be able to afford that stuff. So our thing, like, we started doing a lot of research, a lot of testing, a lot of everything, watching a million things. And we found a great solution that gives you a very similar result without the need of an LED volume. So I mean, we're still testing. This place here is a mess. We have like a server rack in the middle of the place with a bunch of computers and screens and crap here that we're running tests in preparation for the studio. So the idea is that our client is us, is small companies that can't afford paying $60,000 a day or $40,000 or $30,000 a day, but that still can benefit from this type of thing. Like, who's, you know, I'm sure you guys have come into situations where you had a great idea, but that would meant going to Miami to shoot something. And obviously the client can afford to do that. This would open the door to do that type of shoot. There are limitations like everything else, but there are more benefits than limitations with this thing. So we've invested a lot of time, a lot of money into this thing, and hopefully we'll be able to move in by June or so, and opening hopefully late summer.
Nice.
So
we're going to have two.
Thank you. So we're going to have two podcast studios also.
We should go there and do an episode.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You should come and hang out. Absolutely.
Hey, if you need some new guests, you know, you can fly us out, you know, give 100%. Us the whole experience.
100%. I can put you up for sure.
Nice. No, we're excited to see what that's like, because, you know, what you guys are doing is something what a lot of, you know, small production companies are kind of like dreaming to do, but it's obviously not financially viable for everyone, because we all want to have our own space. We all want to have our own studio and then potentially rent it out a little bit just to kind of, you know, make a little bit of that money back. But there's just such a huge investment that goes into it. What was kind of like that experience like for you in terms of like, not only how long did it take to create the space, but to create and plan it, but also how much did it cost over time to set it up?
So I won't tell you the figure because you're going to flip out. I am flipping out.
Now you got to tell us. Come on.
1 million.
So it's a longer story than that. This is a family business thing that my son has a bicycle shop. He makes custom bikes. He builds custom bikes. My wife runs a online boutique store for gymnastics apparel, and I run my business. So the building wasn't purchased for the studio itself. It was purchased to host all three businesses in it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
that's great.
So we sort of spread out the costs and be together in a way that we can always help each other. So that was the logic behind it. It was a good buy. It was horrible timing because it was right at the onset of COVID when we bought it. So we bought, like, the price we paid for it was low, but then it was, I mean, it's been 5 years and we're still not in, so that tells a lot.
Oh, right. Because you guys are renovating the whole thing, right?
So it was actually, this place was, it was not abandoned, but unoccupied for years. This place used to be a Hells Angels bar back in the back in the early 2000s.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So the RCMP, I think, seized it at some point, and then it was vacant. Then a family bought it, but they had trouble you know, within the family, when there's money involved, they could not make a decision on what to do with it. So it was, vacant for a long time, and it's just across, like I can see it from my window here in the loft we're in. So we, walk by or see it, and it's like, that's interesting. So we called and put it, like the price was, like I said, when we called was very low. So we bought it, but then now, after everything, like we added a third floor and we increased the length by about 20 feet to the back. So we added about, maybe like 4,500 square feet.
Wow. That's great.
Of usable space. So that's the story of the, one piece of advice that I'm sure is not necessarily relevant, but if you get into construction, really, really vet your contractor. It's the same as vetting a production company, but worse because the amounts are so much higher.
So how do you vet them? Like, what are you looking for?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, talk, like get references, like real, like ask them for a phone number of people that they've worked with, and make sure that they've done work of the same type and the same scope as you're doing. Because obviously we found out later that this guy, like he was like a more of a residential renovation type of thing.
Oh, okay.
Not commercial. And so he didn't have the experience and he didn't know the know-how. And so bad experience, but we're over it almost.
A guy making a deck.
You said you're almost done building it, like June, you said?
So the building, like it's finished. The paint, like they're painting this week.
Nice. Okay. So it's done then. If you're doing painting.
There's still work on the outside. They like during the winter they finished all the inside, and then, so now to the specifics of the studio, there was a big investment because one of the problems, I'm sure you've had that in where you're at, but one of the problems of renting a place is that most of the places are not soundproof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a pain. Like obviously when you're not recording sound, it's not a problem, but you are, like there's a studio, right now we rent in this old commercial space. It's all lofts. So there are a bunch of photographers and video production companies here and everything. But we rented they had a psych downstairs in the second floor. Great space, I rented it, not even thinking about the sound.
Oops.
And oh my, like a shoot that should have been done in 3 hours took us the entire day.
Whoa.
Just because people upstairs, they're walking, so you have to stop and start, and then editing, that was a night. So that brings me to this place. I wanted to make sure that it was soundproof. So that's a huge cost. Because like every room has double walls with space in between each wall, and like it has like double gyps like on each wall, and it's all the resilient channel and padding, and then once you've done the soundproofing, then you need to sound treat it because it sounds like crap. It's a huge echo chamber in there, so just that alone. We haven't even moved in, and I think just the plaster work and the framing must have been about $60,000.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I was looking into, just to kind of see if Daria and I were to open up our own space, what it would take to soundproof a space. A lot of the places we were looking at had that same issue. Nothing was soundproofed, and so it didn't make sense for us to kind of make a huge investment. And so if we're going to do that, it would cost at least $50,000 just to kind of set up the studio exactly the way you need to. And then the problem if you're renting is that what happens when, and then that $50,000 could be a waste of money after 3 to 5 years if you have to leave or the contract or the building gets sold and they need to, I don't know what could happen, but
buy the place.
That's exactly like you did.
Or if you rent for the long run, like if you get like a 10, 15 year lease, then you amortize that over
that's
that.
That's so risky though, because it's like, you got to know that.
If you haven't done it, yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's definitely risky. So that's that's how we went about it.
I like what you did with the family too. It's like, it's not just your business, you know, your kids, your wife's.
You guys are all entrepreneurs.
It's amazing. It's almost like a dream. Yeah.
Got a business.
Well, yeah, it sounds really good. It doesn't sound so good when you have to make the monthly payments.
When that money's leaving the bank account, right? Because you got to supplement three businesses right there. It's not just the one.
Hopefully things. Things are going well, so I'm sure there's a need for what we're doing, and there's a craving for that. I know we had it. I know we wanted to experiment with that type of technology, but it was never available to us. So I'm doing it with companies like us in mind, like companies that want to get into that, want to do this work, but just like. Even if it was $30,000 a day, there's another studio that opened recently with a smaller volume, but their starting point is like $9,000 a day.
Wow.
So So even that is like, and that's cheap, right?
Yeah.
But again, you still need to bring your lighting, you need to bring your gear, your crew. So like you're looking at a $15,000-$20,000 a day proposition.
Well, interesting. So I guess we're looking forward to seeing how the final product turns out. So let us know so we can at least see some photos, right?
100%. And like once it's all set up, and like, I mean, you're not far. If you ever come to visit for whatever reason, like you should definitely drop by and yeah.
Nice. No, we'll definitely be there. And I guess you kind of answered this question a little bit and terms of what you're kind of setting up for the future, but like what else, what's next for your business, aside from the studio now that you just mentioned, like what are some other things you want to do with the business, for growth or for whichever?
So the studio is like an aside to it, like our bit, like so we want to make sure that it's there's
separate.
An arm's length separation. The studio is the studio. It's its own company. It's its own entity. Its own brand. Our business, IND, will remain doing what we're doing. But we really want to. The plan is to increase our organizational schemes, and you can never get enough of that, and up the value that we offer to the clients. And by that I'm not necessarily referring to charge more, although that comes with it most of the times, but mm-hmm. to really up our game, to really become that that premium service without the premium price tag necessarily.
Kind of like providing more value for the investment that clients give, right?
Exactly. And like get better ourselves and really learn more of whatever we end up doing. Like I've been saying, and this is a recurring theme for me, we go where the wind kind of takes us and make a plan of it. Like we don't let just ourselves be like tossed around, but if we're steered in a direction we see that can work, then we really gravitate towards that and aim to make the best of it. So that's pretty much where we're going at.
Nice.
Cool. All right. I think we can cut it off there. I think we had a pretty good episode.
That was great. Yeah. Cool. No, we appreciate you, Israel, coming onto the show and sharing these unique experiences, and especially when it comes to building a studio and one like the one you're doing, like that's definitely a unique one in and of itself.
Yeah. So yeah, I look forward to watching the episode, and the invitation is really extended whenever you guys are around. Please come by.
Absolutely. And before we end off, just give us a plug for your social and your website.
So our website is indfilms.ca. And our handles for social is indfilmsmtl.
So that's on Instagram, TikTok.
Instagram and Facebook. Yeah, we don't TikTok yet. I've been a little resistant.
It's pretty good.
I know. It's just it's the time factor, but we'll get into that.
Cool.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Israel. Take care.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creatives Grab Coffee. Please make sure to follow and engage with us on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, and your favorite podcast app.
Creatives Grab Coffee is created by Labs Productions, a video production company based in Toronto, Canada.
Creatives Grab Coffee is also sponsored by...
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group band packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We are more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post-sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all going to have a real good time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.